Ballpark Nation presents Extra Innings. All things baseball, movies, and, well, everything.
And welcome to Ballpark Nation's Extra Innings. I'm your host, James Christopher. This is going to be our companion podcast to our new streaming show, Ballpark Nation, which makes this very cleverly titled because it's extra. And in baseball, you like to play extra innings. Actually, I guess Major League Baseball doesn't like playing extra innings. I like extra innings, free baseball. But this is not the opportunity right this very second to talk about Rob Manfred and his desire to ruin the game that I love so much. Basically, we're going to use this as an opportunity to do a couple of things. One, it's going to be our chance to talk about current stories in baseball, both at the major and minor league level. And it's going to be an opportunity to talk to some of the teams that we're not able to get out to this year. Now, for those of you who remember, let's get to the show we wrapped last baseball season. You'll remember that it was a show that featured a lot of travel, but it also had a lot of episodes where we weren't really going anywhere and we were just sort of interviewing teams via Zoom. It really was very much a podcast. When we decided to try to make the move to streaming, and we still don't know which networks that we'll be on yet, we just know we'll have a wider reach. With Ballpark Nation, we knew that it had to have a higher production value, a lot more detail put into it, which meant fewer episodes, which explains why it's not premiering until June. It's going to take at least a month from shooting to release to get every episode ready. But we still like talking baseball regularly. We still like talking to our friends. So that is the point of Ballpark Nation's Extra Innings. I've even dressed up for the first episode. We have a great episode for you. We're going to be talking to Ryland Cobra, the new voice of your or my Round Rock Express. And we're visiting with our favorite baseball podcaster, Emily Nyman of Breakballs Pod. So stay with us. And welcome back to Ballpark Nation's Extra Innings. And if you're going to have your first guest of the season, it might as well be the voice of your hometown, Round Rock Express. We've got Ryland Cobra on the show. Ryland, first of all, congratulations. This has to be the beginning of a step toward a lifelong dream, right? You're now the voice of the Round Rock Express.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me on. Really excited about being here. And yeah, it's been a crazy couple of weeks. I'm definitely thrilled at the opportunity. And for me, you know, obviously it was an exciting time to get the call to be the voice of the Express, but then also to call some games at spring training last week for the Rangers was really that it's been a dream everything the last month. So I'm very fortunate. I think I say this a lot to people. I really do believe I work for the best ownership group in all of baseball.
Oh, I think you do too.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan Sanders Baseball just takes care of their people and they're so good to us. And so I'm very fortunate to be here.
You know, I teach a broadcasting class, and last year, Robert Ford, voice of the Astros, came on and he was talking about how much easier his job got when he went from the minor leagues to Major League Baseball. What is that new workload going to look like for you now that you're still doing your other stuff with the Express, but now you've got to prepare your own game notes and all of that stuff?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing I've always prided myself on since I've started working in baseball is being versatile and being able to do a lot of different things. I still, every once in a while, will jump in to Spike, the mascot around here, and be
what?
Spike. I know, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that.
I don't know that you are either, but
I don't
want to ruin,
but it's on the rarest of occasions. But, you know, whatever is needed from our front office, I'm willing to do. And so everywhere I've been, every stop that I've had in minor league baseball, I have focused on making sure that from a public relations standpoint, we're always in a great spot. And then wherever else I'm needed, I can be there. So this isn't necessarily new for me. Also adding in the broadcasting role, everywhere I've been, I've kind of done, you know, had my hands in everything. And so, you know, doing my game notes every day, you know, I've been doing game notes last year, so that's a nice part where it's like, okay, you know, I do these now, I can use them on the broadcast, so that's helpful. And it's exciting for me to be able to share the notes and the nuggets that I find every day in the clubhouse when I'm talking to guys that I can use for game notes that I can always use every night on the broadcast.
You know, I know on this show we don't always talk about the on-field stuff because the on-field stuff isn't up to you guys as the Express, but it has to be exciting because the Rangers coming off their first World Series, but they're doing it with a still very stacked farm system. The Express should be really good this year. How much of that are you excited about? You know, yeah, it's your first season calling AAA baseball, but probably a team that could be contending for the PCL by when it's all done, said and done.
Yeah, I said this last week when I was doing those games for the Rangers. We won 89 games last year, and a lot of our roster is coming back because the Rangers win the World Series. There's no room for these guys that were with us last year to join the big club. And so there's this log jam. And fortunately for us, it means we're probably going to win a lot of games again this year because these guys are back with us. I mean, we don't have a roster until next week, but you can kind of fill out the puzzle a little early right now and see that a lot of our lineup is back. So it's really exciting. And not only that, but then you got the guys coming up right now and a guy like Jack Leiter, who we saw a little bit of at the end of last year, probably won't make the 26th man to start the season. So we'll probably have him here with us in Round Rock. So it's exciting. And it's last year was a great season for us, both on and off the field. And I really expect this year to be even bigger as we're kind of coming off the heels of the Rangers World Series win.
How much of that is going to help sell the team? I mean, like, having been through two World Series, everybody's thirst is a little bit deeper if you're a fan of that team. So, I mean, do you expect to see a more packed Del Diamond? Not that you don't already do well. And one of the things I've noticed is that Del Diamond's pretty 50-50 at the ballgame between Astros and Rangers fans. Do you think that's going to start to tip? Or just what can we look forward to for you guys celebrating the world title?
I'd say we've already kind of seen the energy for this season early in the offseason after the World Series win. It didn't really feel like we had an offseason. You play, I mean, you know this, the season goes so long when we play all the way up until the end of the World Series. And then you got the parade, and then it's just like that, you know, the holidays are here. So it just has felt like we had our caravan as well. It just has felt like the momentum has continued to build, and we didn't really have an off season because the energy and excitement has really carried over. So I do expect this year to be different from that respect. I just think that people are looking forward to Rangers baseball. And as you said, we know what the Astros presence is in this area. I do think that you'll start to see a lot more Ranger fans coming through our gates. And, you know, we saw it with our caravan. I mean, our Rangers caravan is an event we do in the off season. It's sold out. We've never sold it out faster than we did this year.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a packed house for that. And I expect it to be the same way for our season.
Yeah. And I got to imagine too, that you're even going to have Astros fans root for their hometown Express because you can separate and know that that's going to be a great squad.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, this is the beauty of minor league baseball, as you know, whether you love the Rangers, you hate the Rangers, we're still going to have bobblehead giveaways. We're still going great things going on around the ballpark. So, any night you come here, there's something going on for every single fan that comes through our gates.
Well, speaking of which, there was a point at some point in my life where I started to get a little tired of the alternative food-based names. And then you go and you turn it all the way around with the Round Rock. Like I was so over it that I didn't even see your initial tweet. And it was my co-host that was like, oh God, I need a hat and a shirt. And I was like, what are you talking about? How much fun was developing that? And talk to me a little bit about becoming the Round Rock Briskets.
Yeah, you know, the alternate identity game, every year it feels like there's something catchy that you got to go on Twitter and see, or X, I should say. And you should go on and see. And I feel like we were kind of the buzz of this offseason with our alternate identity. So, yeah, we are going to be the Round Rock Briskets. It fits for our community. This makes sense. Last year with the Round Rock Donuts was such a big hit, and we're bringing it back again this year with that. And so the development process, Joe, who runs the Rail Yard Team Store, he's a mastermind. He's so good at coming up with this stuff. And so he's getting all the merch in right now. I got a new sticker. I wish I would have brought my
oh, I've already, I pre-ordered everything already.
Yeah, you got to. It's been really fun. And I think our fans, the feedback we've already gotten for it has been really cool to see.
I think one of the things you guys do well, and I think the Hooks do it well, I think the Durham Bulls do it well, is your main identity is classic. It feels like what any fan of baseball can like. And then you have a lot of fun with the alternative stuff, the briskets to donuts. I love it when you guys do the whole Austin Senators thing. It's got to be fun to work for an organization that can pivot that much and really can't appeal to just about everybody with one of their looks.
Yeah, and I think this is really a credit to Laura Fragoso, who's our senior vice president of marketing. She's so good at keeping the brand intact. And then we also, like you said, we pivot. I thought Round Rock Donuts, that the weekend we had last year, it says a lot that we're bringing it back. I know you don't, sometimes you don't see that. And the energy around that weekend was so big that we're bringing it back again this year. The community got behind it. And I think everything that we do, we understand that we're doing it for this community. And Round Rock Briskets, it totally fits again for what this area is all about. You know, I coming down here didn't realize beforehand how big brisket is in this surrounding area. And I feel like all I eat is brisket now. So this makes sense.
All right. So I'm not a man to tell. I'm never going to be in the business of telling you your business, but you know, when the briskets are playing and if somebody gets struck out, you have to say that's a Round Rock burnt end. I mean, I'm just saying.
I haven't thought about the way I can use it on air, but that's a good start. I'm going to have to start formulating some ideas.
I know we're just about out of time, but obviously your schedule is populated with giveaways, bringing back the Austin Black Senators night. Talk to me about how much that's grown. I mean, I've seen people from all over the country order the Black Senators stuff. People forget that the ballpark is actually still there. You can go see it. In fact, where Chris's son is coaching. So yeah. How big has that gotten? And are you surprised to see how big it's gotten?
Yeah, I think, again, I just mentioned how before I came down here, I didn't know much about the briskets. I didn't realize how important baseball was to the Austin area from the start, and Willie Wells and his influence on baseball, and the number of great players from not only the Austin area, but the surrounding areas. I think that night and us honoring the Austin Black Senators is really important to remember how that is really the start of some of the greatest baseball players ever. That for a long time did not get the recognition that they deserved. And so we take a lot of pride in that night. And also, in as you said, in that brand and that logo, because we do see, you know, the that hat around the area a lot. You know, we see obviously our classic Express hat a lot, but you go around downtown Austin, you'll see that cap as well. And so it is a really important night for us. And also, I you know, kind of gave myself a little bit more of a history lesson on it this offseason, because I just didn't fully understand and comprehend how important the Austin Black Senators were to the community. And Chase Almendarez is doing a great job as a head coach.
Yeah, really turning that program around, actually. Yeah,
100%. And so it's cool that the tie is there, too, now back to Del Diamond, to there with Chase leading the helm for Houston Tillotson.
Okay, I got to ask about one more theme night in specific. You're not the only one having it, but no one's given me a straight answer yet. What the heck is Wait, Who Are These Guys Day? Can you answer that question?
Not yet.
Okay, all right.
I'll hold off. But no, we're all I'll say is we're looking forward to it, and that'll be coming soon. But no, I don't have a straight answer for it. Sadly, I'm gonna. Have the same answer you've probably gotten a bunch of times.
Yeah. You think I'd heard. I promise I won't tell anybody. all right. Well, again, everybody that needs you, come and check out the Round Rock Express. Whether or not you live in Austin, if you're doing your baseball trip, Del Diamond's been called one of the finest facilities in minor league baseball. And dear Chandler Rome, Astros beat writer, Princess Day is important. Don't be a grumpy old man. And also unblock me on Twitter. Thank you very much. And he is Rylan Cover, the voice of your Round Rock Express. Rylan, congrats again. And thanks for being on Ballpark Nation.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
And we're excited to welcome back to Ballpark Nation Extra Innings. She's going to be with us all season, Emily Nyman from Break Balls Podcast. Emily, We're getting close to, is this the year of 28 for you guys?
You know, it better be, because I say it every year. So this time of year, I'm glad people don't usually go back at the end of the season and listen to like the preseason podcast, because I always say yes, and this year is no different.
Let's talk a little bit about the general state of the Yankees right now. It looks like a lot of potential injury mess. And I noticed like no replacement for Gerrit Cole, even though we both know how that could turn out. We both watch enough baseball to see how that walks down. We're dealing with Urquidy, but that's not the same problem, right, than Gerrit Cole. Thoughts on that rotation, and will it be able to keep up with, at least keep the Mashers in the game?
You know, I think that something that is one part depressing and scary, but another part that kind of makes me feel better about the Yankees' rotation and their reaction to Gerrit Cole's injury is that he's irreplaceable. There was no one that they could go get that it's right. Like, oh, they've now replaced Cole. Like, sure, could they have maybe made their rotation a little bit longer in terms of just like plugging someone like Snell in or even Montgomery? Of course. But the news is promising for Gerrit Cole. You know, there's a notaire that it looks like he just got ramped up a little too fast. He said it looks like he used a quote that he got a little too hot too quick. So he's got some inflammation, and hopefully that means that he'll be back sometime in, you know, June or July. So at this point, like, it's so early now, like the season hasn't even started.
Right.
I can't be doomsday about anything. The Yankees still have a very good team. They have a better team than most teams in the league. Not that bar is very high, but it's only March 19th, you know?
He got a little too hot. Well, I don't know that he's been hot since he had to shave his beard. Let's be honest.
I know. Like, he looks like such a dad.
He looks like,
no offense.
Yeah. You were so intimidating before you left. And then now you're that.
Now he's just Kermit.
So yeah, exactly. You know, we have been Astros fans replaced Yankee fan of the whole, the Blake Snell thing is inevitable. Oh, he's coming. And then not at all. Are you surprised that what do you make of this offseason? Because on the one hand, we've seen like record deals. And then we've seen also like Altuve taking a big deal, but still team friendly. Like there was movement. And then there's periods of time with nothing. And theoretically, the best pitcher did not get anything near what he really wanted. What are your just overall thoughts about what feels like a pretty suppressed schizophrenic offseason?
You know, I'm very cynical about this kind of stuff that I can't help but think that
this is why I asked you.
The owner collusion is just getting worse. Like, everyone has been so quick to blame Scott Boras, and like as if it was just a failure of representation. And now I'm not saying that he's completely free of blame in terms of not being able to get his clients the sort of deal that they were hoping for. But I think that's a lazy take to just assume that like Boras is suddenly now ineffective. Like, we don't, unless this guy suffered some sort of traumatic brain injury, that is definitely not the case. So like, there is a lot of collusion going on. The way the system is set up, the owners are basically like dissuaded. They've dissuaded themselves from going after free agents, because now, you know, Blake Snell, he's on the wrong side of 30. And so is Jordan Montgomery. And their history didn't help them much either. That's the thing. Snell, this wasn't the strongest free agent class. You know what I mean? Like, I know Bellinger is a name, and I know that Snell is a name, and Montgomery is a name, but they're not really like the top names. And Snell won a Cy Young, but he's got this up and down career where
he won a Cy Young with a relatively small sample size, because the guy can't go past the fifth. And the whole thing, I'm sitting here going, like, as a fan of the Strohs, of like, no, we need an innings eater. Like, we need somebody who can get it back to the back end of that bullpen, and we've only given up 3 or 4 runs. Like, I don't need what I know we're not going to get from. I was going to say something about him living in a trailer, but that might have been rude. I just get trailer vibes from him. I don't know. But yeah, you're right.
Yes, he definitely has sold drugs out of a Monte Carlo wearing a like a velour suit. That's what he looks like if he weren't playing baseball.
Yeah. You know, people do underestimate the fact that Boras, to some degree, is still doing what his clients want. Like, it's not – I think people have been so – grown so comfortable demonizing Boras in the microcosm and agents through the as a larger scale, because then they can blame them for their favorite player not coming back, as opposed to the player might not have wanted to be here. And again, I'm sure that Boris didn't want Altuve signing a team-friendly deal, but he did. So it's not like he was talked out of it. I think people need to realize that these guys recognize that there's a short amount of time that you can make money, and you're talking about generational wealth, and they should get what they deserve.
Yeah, I totally agree. People say that he misread the market, and I don't really know if that makes sense, because these guys were the market. Like, they were setting the market. So it wasn't that it was misread. It's that what were they supposed to do? Was Boris supposed to tell his client, hey, listen, you're actually not as valuable as you think you are, and I think you are, and your peers think you are? No, he's not going to say that. That's not his job. But it's also not his job to tell them what to do, like you said. So this idea that, like, oh, he's holding Snell back, he screwed this up. No, they did the best that they could. And sadly, a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of, like, missing each other in terms of ownership and players and value. And it's always that the owners are going to devalue every single player that steps foot into the free agent market, because that's what they do.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about this as you were saying that, like, other sports don't have the whole arbitration thing where your whole job is to go in and make a case against the guy that you're trying to lowball. And then I don't know. I know these guys are professionals, but for me, I would have a hard time going back to my job if I just heard how much you thought I sucked.
And those are the best years of their career usually. So it's like, this is the best that these guys are going to get. And they're going to a table and their team is trying to tell, well, you know, you struck out during this big moment, and all these anecdotal moments in a season that don't matter. Like, I remember, I think it was a pitcher on the Brewers. I can't remember exactly which one. And he went to arbitration a year or two ago. And he was saying that they tried to use against him the fact that, like, he lost a playoff game or something, when his body of work over the season was top of the league. So that's the sort of disingenuous stuff that the teams are coming with to that arbitration table. So I'm not going to pretend to know what it's like to be a free agent or to even be a player representative. So I think that the overall lesson here is just that the league is sick, and this is, like, where it is rotting from, is this entire process. And it's not going to get any better anytime soon, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think also we talked about whether Boris gauged the market or not. If the market's being artificially suppressed, which I think both of us think it is, then how are you supposed to read that market with any real accuracy?
Owners have time on their side. That is the best leverage that they could possibly have. And it's a leverage that cannot be removed from them. They don't care. What do they care if Blake Snell doesn't sign with the team? He wants to waste his career waiting for someone to pick him up. So be it. The Steinbrenner family, you know, all these teams, they can own forever. They literally can die and bequeath the team to their relatives. So, like, what is time to an owner? It's basically irrelevant to them, and it's everything to the players.
It's everything. It's so funny you said that too. Like, Andy, who you know from our other stuff, he messaged me this weird thing where the Astros payroll is now more than the highest value it was for the previous owner. Like the value of the team. Like, that's how much these teams' values have exploded with. And I'm sorry, but I think these third tier rights are actually going to end up being a boon for the teams now that they get to control more of them.
Yeah, and even, like, the Astros have had unprecedented success in terms of how their franchise history, but even super bad teams, their value has gone up too. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, fuck
their
shit.
Value is, oh, perfect. All right, that makes me feel very comfortable. I feel at home now.
Good.
Their value has gone up as well. Like, the A's value has gone up. All these teams, their value goes up no matter what. So that's why it's like, spare me the fans, spare me, like, the defending the corporation and defending the organization during these processes. Like, give me a break. The idea that, like, oh, actually, no, it's the players that are screwing this up. Like, come on. Get real.
And I get where that comes from, right? From, like, an emotional perspective. You know, we the Astros have seen a bunch of players leave. And the one that really hurt me was Springer. He was my favorite player of But then I, you know, then if you follow his career and realize that he got screwed out of a year of control by 3 days, there's no way he's re-signing with Jeff Luno at the time, right? Like, this is not going to, or I guess it wasn't Luno had just left, but there's no way you're re-signing with that organization.
Right. And those relationships mean a lot, right? You know, that the idea that, like, oh, it's just about money. Like, no, it's not. It's these teams and the players alike, they can burn bridges. And then it's like, okay, well, this relationship is over and there's really no going back from this. So
one, yeah, I think it, particularly when you're talking about these relationships being important in baseball of all sports, 162. I mean, it's just this long, long marathon. I'm curious, though, now that Snell has signed, do you see, like, Lorenzen and Montgomery and all these guys now signing sooner than later? And I keep going back to the Astros signing Odorizzi that ended up not being an effective signing because he had not ramped up. And then it took him until, I think, maybe June, and then he was ineffective. So do you even think it's valuable for a team to add these arms at this point?
You know, I think it is, because this is all going to drive their value down, right? I mean, just like that anecdote I told a few minutes ago, that teams will use a single game against a player in arbitration. They will absolutely use situation that they've created by having these guys wait and not signing them and saying, hey, you're not going to be able to really pitch for this team maybe until, you know, maybe until May or maybe until the end of April, or you're going to be ineffective until this date. So why are we going to pay you X amount? Like, it's a lose-lose. I absolutely think that they're going to sign, because their value isn't going to get better if they just sit out an entire year. They may never even get back into the major league if they do that. So I think that they're really between a rock and a hard place. And I know it's like, oh, boo-hoo, they're going to have a few million dollars less than what they were originally going to get. But like you said before, this is their one. They've literally worked their entire life to get to this moment, to get to free agency. So few players last long enough to get here.
Yeah.
This is their one shot. This is the most money that they're going to make on the market, because going back, Snell's not going to get a bigger contract. He may get job security. That's what he's going to be after when he becomes a free agent again, either at the end of this year or next year. And the same is going to be for Montgomery, because that's what Snell got. Monty is not going to get much more than that. I mean, they were all obviously waiting for Snell to sign a deal because he was going to be the one to set that market. And this is what it is.
We were going to do our predictions, but I'm going to wait till next week to do that, because the MLB, I did it. Oh my God, I hate that.
All right, no, we gotta scrap this episode.
The MLB Spring Breakout Series, it felt like they finally did something kind of right for the fans, except they didn't air most of them, so you couldn't really watch them. But what were your thoughts on that? The way they seem to start at least trying to create a situation where they're going to promote some of their future stars earlier, because I think that's been one of the big complaints a lot of us have had, is they market 5 or 6 players and they don't celebrate. Like, for Trout, as for as much as he's the best player of a generation, they don't really do a whole lot to celebrate Trout because he's not at the team they want him to be at. What did you think of the whole spring breakout thing?
You know, I thought it was really cool. I thought that this is what spring training is about, right? You know, the guys are going to make the team. Your Aaron Judges and Altuve, they only play a few innings every game, if they play at all. Yeah. So, like, this is what this time of year is about. And I thought it was excellent. And this may be the only time that some of those guys get to wear, you know, pinstripes, or get to wear that Astros home uniform and get to represent that, because they may not amount to anything after this. You know, their careers could really turn south. So I really think that it's a really cool thing to add. And MLB loves to sometimes dip their toe in the, hey, let's do something good for our brand in the game. But then, you know, they'll end up pulling it back.
Yeah.
But then they end up taking two steps back by not airing some of the games.
Yeah.
And it's so
dumb.
That was
the thing that, you know, we could talk all day about stupid it is that I live in Austin, Texas, equidistant from the Rangers and Astros, and blacked out from both teams. Like what? And I became an Astros season ticket holder, and they were so sweet. They offered me a free MLB package.
Oh, that's nice.
Become a Cardinal fan, and I don't know how that will work. But yeah, I agree. I thought it was nice to see some of these names, and I was really appreciative of, like, the one game where they had a 1-1 facing off, like, to start the game. Like, that was kind of cool. More of that, please. One of the big debates, and I'm stalling to the main topic because I want to get into it. We're just stalling 1 second. There's been a proposal to figure out a way for MLB players in the Olympics. Now, I'm for it. Curious as to where you come down on it.
The Olympics are tough. You know, the World Baseball Classic, I understand. It was almost like in lieu of spring training to a certain extent. The Olympics are in August, usually, right? Yeah. Usually like the entire month of August. I know for my sake that, or from my perspective rather, if the Yankees aren't ahead of their in their division, if they aren't like plus 15 games up in the division, I don't want anybody playing. I don't want anyone playing in that period. This sport is so dependent on like the super fine motor skills that a broken finger can completely screw up a season and could see a pitcher not be able to pitch for now until, you know, who knows, October. Or yeah. I it's selfish of me. And I think that even if they would allow it, you would never see any of the starters go and do that. You'd maybe have some minor league guys.
I was almost thinking, even if you sent your best in AAA, and maybe you let each team gets to send their best AAA player or whatever it is, I still think that's got to be good enough to beat most countries.
I would say so. I mean, I think that that's what they used to do, because baseball was in the Olympics until like, what, 2012?
Yeah, and then I think it's coming back, but I don't remember how they used to field those teams.
I think it was like college guys and maybe some minor leaguers, yeah. Like lower minor leaguers.
Well, all right, we're going to dive into the big thing, because one of the coolest things I saw happening is that your Yankees are going to be playing the Diablos Rojos of the Mexican League. I guess they're not actually in the Mexican League, which is the first thing that Bauer fudged on. They are not actually part of the, which is considered a AAA level league, right? The Mexican League. Trevor Bauer is going to pitch against the Yankees. So now we'll see which version of the Yankees do show up. I've got a student of mine who is a massive Yankee fan. He just wants to see Stanton just go yard over off Bauer over and over again.
Don't we all?
But why is it, or why are we sitting in this space where the big news today was I guess an Astros radio station hypothesized, should the Astros sign Bauer? And I was at least proud that most of the fans were like, no, to the point that they didn't listen to the radio piece. And those guys also settled on no. They were just mad at the headline, which I guess doesn't say very many good things. But why is it that we're still bending over backward to forgive a guy who didn't dispute anything that happened, including knocking her unconscious? He just said it was consensual. Which, why are we still allowing this guy to be part of this game, even tangentially?
Yeah, I think that, and this is really giving some people the benefit of the doubt that they probably don't really deserve. On one level, I think it's because the key pieces of evidence, apparently, and this is according to Lindsey Hill, who was one of his victims, Bauer wears a GoPro while having sex with these women, and Rob Manfred and all the MLB investigators, that whole cohort, and I guess, you know, Lindsey Hill and or Bauer's representatives, they watched those videos of Trevor Bauer beating the shit out of these women during sex. Now, whether it's people want to argue it's consensual or not is completely irrelevant, because MLB has a very strict joint domestic violence and abuse policy, and he clearly violated. It doesn't matter if someone said, hey, yeah, like beat the shit out of me. That's doesn't matter. It was literally on film. This is his own fault for, first of all, doing that and filming it. So they had something tangible. And that usually isn't the case with other DV cases. It's just kind of a he said, she said, a hospital report, police report. This was actual video. Like, I can only assume it's because we can't see those videos, and everyone wants to say, oh, you know, he's being set up, and it's because they are legally not allowed to like show those videos, or according to Lindsey Hill, is what she was saying. So I think that people, they care more about winning. And I don't even think that he would necessarily help a team win. Like, it's not like he's Garrett Cole. Like, he sucks now and he's 33 years old. Like, give me a break.
He gave up base hits to Barstool guys. Like, like, and then
his Japanese team doesn't even want him back. Why isn't he there?
Well, he loved it so much. I'm going to push back on something. I don't know that the video matters at all. And that's only because
you're probably right.
Like, I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm not a Texans fan. And so, but I know who Mixon is because he was at OU when he beat the crap out of his girlfriend, and that was on video. And of course, Oklahoma suspended him for a year. That was it. And now Texans fans are twisting themselves into knots, trying to create a distance between that and Bear. And I get it, man. Your team signed somebody like that. And I fully believe that all of the Astros stuff that came out and broke and was covered by the media the way it was had everything to do with Allison Futter. When we had Osuna, every single time he would pitch, she would tweet out a hotline for a woman's abuse shelter every time. And apparently when the Astros won the AL in 2019, the now fired assistant GM yelled in her direction, "I'm so glad we kept Osuna." I believe you mess with reporters, they're going to have each other's back. I just don't know that. I don't know that you could present these people with any amount of evidence. I don't know that it matters.
Yeah. You know what? You're right. And it really boils down to just a societal issue that violence against women is kind of okay. People can say that, oh, it's wrong, but when push comes to shove, when it's their favorite team and it's just their form of entertainment. Cause let's break it down. I don't mean to belittle this. I mean, we obviously love it. We spend a lot of time watching and talking, and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, but it's entertainment. It's the right. entertainment industry. So people care more about their entertainment than they do about women. And all of this becomes part of the entertainment, and Bauer understands that. And we're still talking about him because he is purposely keeping himself in the news and keeping himself as a headline and keeping himself relevant online, because this is what it does. It gets people talking about him and it keeps him in the conversation. So people just care more about their entertainment because it doesn't happen to them. Didn't happen to anyone they know. So in their opinion, oh, maybe she, you know, she asked for it, or she could have, what did she say to him? Like, as if there is an excuse for beating the shit out of somebody. And you know, and that's just a societal issue. And that just boils down to, it's completely okay to just beat the shit out of women. As far as a lot of men are concerned, they just won't say that out. And they just won't say that out loud. They use a bunch of coded language.
Yeah. And I think, I do not blame. I mean, we talked about the collusion earlier, but I do think it's probably some degree of collusion as well that Bauer hasn't signed with anybody, and I don't blame them. And first of all, it's a public relations disaster. And if you're talking about one of the, say, 10 best teams in the league, of which your team is one, my team is one, they're not going anywhere near that. So he would sign with who? The A's? Like, it's just a all-around gross situation. And I'll be generous and say, look, I know that you and I both there's a certain chunk of our identity wrapped up in the team that we love.
Yes.
And it's hard not to feel part of it. I'm a guy who says we because I spent $12,000 on season tickets.
Right. Yeah.
But I think the way to answer the question, if you have like Termon just re-signed, right? You just say, hey, I root for the front of the jersey. I can't help who they signed. Like, it doesn't make you that same bad person. Therefore, you don't have to defend it. But I do think there's just a lot of old-fashioned misogyny going on when it comes to him.
Oh, without question. And because of this false belief that there is a ton of false accusations, which there aren't, for anyone listening, by the way, that the amount of false accusations in comparison to real accusations, it's like such a minuscule percentage. Yeah. But because of that, people are somehow able to see themselves in the shoes of someone like Trevor Bauer, where they feel like, hey, that could be me unfairly persecuted. And the only reason I think he's being unfairly persecuted is because he told me he is. So they just are ready to believe that. And they want to believe, you know what? I hope that someone comes and defends me if and when it happens to me, as if that would happen to them. Like, it's like, well, if you don't beat the shit out of somebody, it probably won't happen to you.
He doesn't deny doing any of it. Like,
and that's a big reason too, is that MLB is thinking this is a violation of our policy. However, this guy chooses to have sex, he's violating the policy so egregiously that he was handed the longest suspension in Major League history. And even when an arbiter reduced it, it was still the longest suspension in Major League history. That cannot be done. He can't be railroaded. into that. He can't have not done anything wrong and received that suspension. That's what his representation was for. That's what his representation from the Players Association is for, to protect players from that sort of conniving and, like, you know, what is it? Like, I can't think of the word, like a back alleyway for the league to cease contracts. He did this. So the league is thinking, hey, if he's on a team and this is how he has sex and he's completely unapologetic about it, he's going to do it again. And then he's going to be wearing my uniform and he's going to be in my city and my fans are going to have to deal with this, and it's just not worth it.
Yeah, 100%. And first thing, we should also clear something up. I did not go to law school.
Lawyer school, me either.
I've seen a lot of Law and Order on TV. He was not found guilty. He was not proven innocent. He was not exonerated. The DA made a judgment call about whether or not he thought he could win the case. That is literally why he was not tried. It had nothing to do with him being proven innocent by the system. It had everything to do with, it's hard, as it should be, to find someone guilty in our justice system. And the DA didn't want to take an L. And I don't blame them for that. But that is what happened. He was not exonerated by our legal system.
And that's a case with a lot of like domestic violence and sexual violence. It's very difficult to prove in court because no one is there. No one else is there to witness this. And it's too easy to be like, well, they said they wanted it. And then it's like, well, okay, well, how do you disprove that necessarily? You know what I mean? So,
well, you also get women who get so intimidated that when a push comes to shove, then they're then afraid to testify or afraid to do whatever. Sorry, I cut you off, though. What were you going to say?
Like, I was just going to say, like, let me put it this way. Do people really believe that crime doesn't happen unless it's proven in a court of law? Like, so the only people that have ever committed crimes are people that are found guilty? And do you really believe that people who are found not guilty, every single person that's ever been found not guilty, they didn't do it? Like, just read a book, read how our law system works. Just like, even just a few chapters. You don't have to have gone to law school to understand how the system works and why they are not guilty and not proven innocent. The court doesn't say, oh, you are innocent. They just say you're not guilty because it couldn't be proved beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
That's it.
We, this is a long anecdote, but I was shooting a movie, and I was shooting on the ranch of Willie Nelson's criminal attorney. And it was when the Casey Anthony thing broke and she was proven not guilty. And, he like sat with all of the cast and crew and explained everywhere where, as a defendant's attorney, the prosecution went wrong that led to that. And because, like, for example, they just went for murder. They didn't go for a lower charge. And then juries don't want to put somebody on death row if they can help it. Like, all this stuff that has nothing to do with whether or not she killed her child. And it's the same situation here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, even just watching, and obviously documentaries, they are presenting in a manner to have you believe one thing or another. And understanding that, even just like reading, I will go down like Wikipedia rabbit holes. I'll spend hours on it, like I'm John Nash in A Beautiful Mind style. And I have done that about the O.J. Simpson trial. That is a clear case of the prosecution, and they completely fumbled, no pun intended. They completely fumbled that case. And to say that, oh, O.J. was proven was not guilty, so that means he didn't do it. It's like, didn't he do it? Like, I don't know. I feel like there's so many examples.
So
there's so many examples of just like the like, what is it, like a miscarriage of justice. So for all these nerds online to be like, Trevor Bauer, he deserves a second chance. Sorry, he's a grown man. These guys are grown men. I mean, look at that video of Aroldis Chapman the other night, like completely violating a member of his family because a stupid course or whatever that the MLB makes. I just said it. You're off the hook. I just said the MLB too. That MLB makes these guys take after they get popped for domestic violence, as if one of them is going in there and being like, wow, you know what? You are right. Women are people and I should treat them right. Like, no, they're not. They had completely see women as objects, and they continue to, even after their suspension is served. So Come on, people, get your head out of your ass. Enough.
He's not in prison. So that's his second chance.
Right. And he's eligible to be on a team.
Yeah.
That's his second chance.
It's just a poor financial investment for any team. I do want to ask you, and I almost feel bad asking you this question because I don't know. It's almost unfeminist of me, and I do consider myself a feminist. But what are your thoughts on the fact that he props up, and his attorney is a woman, and she like there has to be some feelings that you feel as a woman watching her just basically completely sell any level of integrity she has for this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's so obvious. I even think that he saw this writing on the wall because there's been complaints about him in the past, and that's why he hired, you know, what's her face, Luba,
Rachel
whatever.
Luba, yeah.
Yeah, Rachel Luba as his agent, and he's now got, you know, the female attorney. That this is all for the image, right? Because then it's like, oh, how could he doesn't hate women? Look, women represent him in these situations, and it's all for the show. So I think that, and women who do that, you know, they're traitors. They are just traitors to other women. It's like, it's hard enough to be a woman out here, and we really need to stick together. So I don't really like going after other women, but in a case like this, like, you're a traitor and you were completely selling out for this absolute psychopath. And when your career is over, and it soon will be, especially Rachel Luba, she's going to be finished soon. She picked up Yasiel Puig and now Bauer. Like, you're going to look back on your life and your career, and sure, you'll have some money from those contracts, but at what cost? Like,
she partnered with Trump's New York lawyer because she was of equal ability. You know, I know we're close to wrapping up, but you said something earlier. I do wonder, though, how much of a percentage of the people we see online are like that sort of incel population, right? That are hate women because they don't have never had a girlfriend or whatever it is. Like, they're doing all of that. And I do think, like, I remember when the Me Too thing happened, and, you know, I remember being like 16 and having a girlfriend, and, you know, I emailed her, and it's like, look, if I ever made you feel uncomfortable, I was a walking hormone, and I do apologize. She actually said she felt bad for not putting out more, so I guess that's okay. But well, I don't think she watches the show, so anyway. But I do wonder if part of the reason why these guys will defend somebody like Bauer is maybe because as norms have changed, the way they behaved before 20 years ago wouldn't be the way you do it now, and maybe there is some guilt there. Maybe there's some kind of residual guilt, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think that a lot, especially the people that are going hard in the paint for guys like Bauer, I think that it's very suspect, and I absolutely 100% assume that anyone who does that is probably a complete scumbag to other degrees than just defending someone like Bauer.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with, and obviously Bauer is an egregious case, but a lot of it has to do with people think that, like, sexual violence and violence against women, if it's not overt, like, Law and Order type of violence, like someone creeping in a window at 3 a.m. to rape somebody, then it's not sexual harassment or it's not sexual violence. And it's because they've done things like that, or their friends or their family member have done things like that. So it's completely normalized to them. So they don't see it as them committing some sort of heinous act like that. They just are now feeling like society is getting woke and coming down on normal behavior. And
when that normal behavior is having sex with your girlfriend who's too drunk to say yes or no.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or just like,
I mean, that's right. There's no,
yes,
stands and buts about it. Like,
even just commenting on a woman's body, like commenting on your coworker's body, like they think, well, I'm saying something nice to them. Like, no, do not do that. Like, just treat women as other people. Like, stop treating them like this. Like, it's just, but you have a lot of people that are just stuck in their ways, and it's all learned behavior, right? That however you're raised, it's trying to fight against that is really an uphill battle. And unfortunately, a lot of people were raised in environments where it's completely okay to just treat women as objects and as second class citizens on almost every level.
All right. So as we get out of here, then, positive view on the thing, you know, you have grown your footprint in baseball. I think we definitely should consider yourself like a baseball influencer. We've seen women moving up in front offices. We see women behind the mic. Do you think that the presence of more women in positions of power will shut people like my grandfather up and hopefully make some of this behavior, or at least the tendency to defend perpetrators of this behavior. Do you think you see that? Will that have a positive impact and slow some of that stuff down? Or do you think it's not going to matter?
I think it absolutely will. And it already is. I mean, the fact that women are even in these positions and they're able to enter traditional male spaces and have their opinions be respected. And that's not to say that it's very difficult to be a woman in a male space. And there are a lot of people that dislike it and try to bring you down and say nasty things to you. But online is a tough environment, and it's tough. It like being online is not like real life. And I'm not saying that what happens online doesn't matter, because I hate that excuse when people act like it's not real, like as if there isn't a person on the other side of that.
As if we don't have a whole other show's worth of kids killing themselves over what happens online. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It matters so much that this person is so upset at just this woman being here online that they are saying these things. So obviously it matters, but the point is to push through, and it can be really hard to do that. And I really respect a lot of every woman that pushes through in traditional male spaces, because it's really not easy and it requires having a really, really thick skin, and it shouldn't be that way, but it is that way. And of course it absolutely matters, because representation matters in media. So when people see a woman in media, and they see a woman on, you know, on the sideline at a sports, at a game, or they see them in the studio post and pregame, little girls see that and they say, hey, like, I could do that too. And that's how people set dreams for themselves. Everyone as a little kid, I mean, so many men, I want to be a firefighter, I want to be an astronaut, I want to be a pro athlete. And it's because they're seeing people who look like them do these things. So yes, it does absolutely matter. And no offense to your grandpa, but I don't know if they'll change their mind, but they're going to die. Like, that's the thing about old people, they die.
He's been dead for a while, and I inherited this like box of his stuff, and he was like a big Catholic Knights of Columbus guy, and he had a button that says, I stand with our priest. And I was like, oh my God, was this like his, like, oh my God.
What year did he get that button?
I think, I want to say like 03, so maybe early enough in this, but I was like, whoa, Poppy.
Putting that one in the trash.
What are we doing? Oh yeah, it did not even make it. All right, real quick though, you have a new episode out. Where can everybody find you?
You can find it on at Breakballs Pod on Twitter, and any platform that you listen to podcasts, Apple, Spotify, you name it. I hadn't recorded in months. It felt really good to be back. I was joined by my friend Javi Reyes, who hosts Locked On Padres, and we talked about just everything that's been going down. I'm going to be releasing another episode this weekend, so I'm back, baby. If you like this show, you're definitely going to like that show too, because it's just more of the same.
Absolutely. Check it out. All right. Thanks, Rylan. Thanks, Emily. That does, of course, wrap up this first episode of Ballpark Nation. We're going to be back next week with our Major League Baseball preview. You never know who's going to join us. I know Emily will be here. I think Gary Warren will be here. And you just never know who else might be dropping by.